Welcome to In Faith Network Radio. Celebrate Christ with us as we go behind the scenes of Christian entertainment to reveal hidden blessings and share with the Christian community. In Faith Network Radio.
Hello and welcome to In Faith Network Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English, and with me is my favorite co-host, Anita Higman. Welcome, Anita.
Happy to be here, Sheila. Thanks.
And we'll just give fair warning, about 5 minutes before Anita and I came into the studio, I have a hailstorm that just started. Thunder, lightning, hail. It was like, I told Anita, I said, we must be doing something right. Because
That's right.
Every time we have one of our in-faith shows, something like this seems to happen, and we always land on our feet. So, you know, thank God for that. We're really excited about our guest tonight, and I know we have a lot of people. I've already heard from several of you saying they're looking forward to tonight's show. We have Jerry B. Jenkins, who is the author of more than 175 books, including the 70 million selling book, Left Behind series, 70 million books of that for that series. That just boggles the mind. Jerry Jenkins is also, he also owns the Christian Writers Guild, which aims to train tomorrow's professional Christian writers. Very excited about that. Jerry speaks widely, primarily on writing, and is a sought-after humorist. He and his wife, Diana, live in Colorado and have 3 grown sons and 8 grandchildren. Jerry, welcome to In Faith Radio.
Well, great to be with you, and you caught me on my spiritual birthday. This is the day 56 years ago that my mother led me to Christ.
Oh, my.
That is exciting. Years ago, and it was your mom.
Yeah.
That is, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Exciting. This is an exciting day.
I feel like I should be more mature by now, but anyway, it is a day I commemorate.
Well, and we're happy to be able to spend some of this day with you. That's exciting.
Thank you.
Now, we've been looking forward to having you on the show for months, and you know it's truly an honor to be able to talk with you. I'm a big fan, and so this was, I've been doing a countdown myself and going on my Facebook and saying, okay, it's just so many days, and really looking forward to it. So this is exciting for me personally. Now, before we start talking about your books, your life, and your faith, let me just get our listeners all settled in. For our listeners, we do have the live chat session open and invite you to stop by. You can leave comments or ask questions. And, of course, after the show, you can download the podcast or come on over to infaithnetwork.com first thing tomorrow. Check out the blog that we'll have posted up there with the podcast. And we'll make sure that any URLs we talk about, any websites, we'll get that over there so that you have it. You don't have to write it down. And I know a lot of you like to look at websites while we're talking. Jerry does have a website at jerryjenkins.com, but he let us know earlier that it's about to get a major facelift, which is exciting. There's still lots of information that's on there. But, you know, if you're looking at it tonight, definitely, you know, come back and check it out in a little bit when it gets updated. So that's exciting. But also, you can actually find him on Facebook. And if you go to Facebook, I actually just went there and looked up Jerry Jenkins, and it came right up to the top. You can't miss it. But it's facebook.com/Jerry B. Jenkins. But like I said, you can just search for it and find it there. There's a lot of information there, and it's all current. It's a great way to engage. Jerry, we'd love to know, just kind of right off the top, what you're working on currently. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm really involved in one of the most exciting things I've ever done. And you mentioned, you know, that I've done quite a bit of things over these last several decades. So it really has to be something special for me to say that. I am 2 days away from starting the writing. In fact, I'm in my writing cave now. We live in Colorado Springs. I drive about 80 miles west to where my writing cave is near the Continental Divide. I have incredible views, and I'm here without excuse. You know, I have to work, but I start the writing Saturday of a 2-volume work of fiction based on the life of Paul. And the first one will be called I, Saul, and the second one will be called I, Paul. And they're both going to be 750 pages of manuscript, 150,000 words. So it's really one of the biggest and most heavily researched things I've ever done, and I just can't wait to start it. But, you know, I'm acclimating to the altitude. We're about 9,500 feet above sea level here, and my brain keeps telling me it doesn't have enough oxygen and wants to go to sleep, so I have to get ready for that. And then I've got this mountain of research, and by Saturday I've got to be able to have that all in order and be ready to go.
Well, that's exciting. I really am very excited about it. So it's two volumes, the first one I saw and the second one I, Paul, and it sounds like this is epic.
That's really what we're hoping. Worthy Publishing out of Brentwood, Tennessee is the publisher, and for lack of a better term, my Tim LaHaye on this project is a Chicago megachurch pastor named James McDonald, who speaks on walking the word every day and is a great preacher, but also just a real thorough researcher, and I've just got gold as far as having access to all his resources. So it's just going to be a really fun project. I've been looking forward to it for several months and planning for it and reading for it.
Well, now you said it's a work of fiction about the life of Paul. Are you going to lead us on a journey of the kind of how you imagine Saul became Paul? Is that kind of what we're going to get with these?
Yeah, and, you know, people always have the question, how do you write fiction based on Scripture? I mean, you know, you definitely don't want to vary from the truth of Scripture. But the fact is that the outline of the life of Paul is pretty much in the book of Acts, but there's so much there. For instance, one that just really jumps out at me, it says that when Paul was held under guard and was about to be transported from Jerusalem to Rome to be tried, his nephew, his sister's son, overhears an assassination plot and tells the right people and thwarts that. Now, that's only about three paragraphs or three verses in Scripture. To a novelist, that's several chapters. I mean,
right.
You know, how does he have a relative that would be in a position to hear something like that? He's probably not a believer, and yet he's loyal enough to Paul to thwart this assassination plot. So I'm not really making up things that wouldn't appear, you know, wouldn't be in Scripture, but would just be hinted at, and so it's just fleshing those out and giving people names and inventing conversations that probably happened. It would be very close. So it gives some latitude, and yet I'm obviously very careful not to violate the truth of Scripture.
I love that. So what kind of research do you do for that then? I mean, are you looking at, like, I was just in Rome, and, you know, they still have the prison where they say that Paul was kept. I just wonder, you know, how do you research beyond the Bible?
Well, that's one way. I have visited the cities of Paul and visited that very cell that you're talking about. And, of course, you know, a lot of the things that are traditional there, you don't know if they're actual, but they sure give you a lot of insight. And then the cities, are the very cities and the ruins from the first century are the roads that he walked on. So that's fascinating. Then there are videos, there are books. You know, there's been so much done on Paul. The interesting approach that I think I bring to it is that I'm not a theologian or a scholar. I count on those people to give me the details and try to tell me what it means. But I come at it as a layman, trying to tell the story that's understandable to everybody. And I've just found it fascinating. It's in one way overwhelming. It's you know, I come to the keyboard in spite of all the stuff I've done, with this real feeling of you know, this awareness of the poverty that I bring to the table. And so I say, okay, I've spent my entire adult life writing and learning to write and trying to grow and keep polishing my skills, but there's a huge gap between my worthiness to do justice to a project like this, and so it just keeps me relying on the Lord to give me what I need for this.
Well, I know, you know, the story of Paul affects so many people, so this is very exciting news, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. You know, you're kind of a Renaissance man, I think. You were talking a little bit earlier. You're an author, you're a teacher, you're a speaker. You own the Christian Writers Guild and Jenkins Entertainment. You know, of all the things that you're doing, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, my favorite is being a grandfather. my two married sons. Last year we had five grandchildren. This year we have eight because they've added three by adoption. our oldest son, the movie director that runs our film company, they added a five-year-old Thai orphan from Thailand to their family, and then my son Chad, who lives in Kansas and is a sports information director at a Christian college, they had two little boys, and they added two African American kids to their brood, and so they've got four kids, four and under. And I, you know, for of all the things my kids have done, I'm prouder of them for this than anything I can think of. And it's so much fun to. We had all eight kids and families with us at Christmas, and it was just a madhouse. But it's just great fun.
Oh, I love that. I have to live vicariously through my brother right now. He has a little granddaughter, and I do my very best to spoil her in the way in which I'm sure he would like me to. So I can't wait. I can't wait to be a grandparent. I'm looking forward to that. I have to wait a little bit. My daughter's 11, so I'm trying to be patient.
Yeah. No, there's nothing like it. You just find that you know, there's just sort of you are reminded every day that parenting is for the young. I mean, you know, we're just glad to give those kids back occasionally, but it's just, you know, it just fills your heart. You know, you have this unconditional love for these kids, and you just want the best for them. And you also have learned a lot of lessons from having been a parent. As we look back, you know, we spent an awful lot of time with our kids, but I think everybody would say this that's our age, that, you know, if you had it to do over again, you might do a little less running around and delivering them to activities and just more just logging the time, talking and being with them, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, many people know you from your Left Behind series, you know, and I'd like to talk a bit about that. Can you tell us how you got involved with that series and how it's affected your life?
Yeah, I signed with an agent back in the early 1990s, and I had written probably close to 100 books by then without even having an agent. I'd had a history of being a publisher and editor myself, but I signed with this agent, and a few weeks after I signed with him, he called and asked me if I knew Tim LaHaye, and I had never met Tim, but I knew of him, of course. Everybody knew of Tim LaHaye, a great nonfiction writer and pastor and theologian and all that. And so I said, well, you know, I was familiar with him but hadn't ever met him, and he said, well, Tim is a best-selling nonfiction author who has a great fiction idea, and you're a novelist with no ideas, so we need to get you two together. And so he, you know, we got together at a hotel near O'Hare Airport and just hit it off. He's the same age as my mother was before she passed, and so there's a real father-son dynamic there. Plus, I loved his idea. He said he'd written a lot of books about the rapture and the second coming, nonfiction books, but he said everywhere he looks, people are reading fiction. So, you know, could I take his research and write novels based on the Bible prophecies? And so that's what I did, and it's just been an incredible collaboration. It turned out to be 16 books over, you know, about 10 years, and you know, I feel like I attended the LaHaye School of Theology, you know, and but I got the fun part. I got to write every word. He was a great encourager and cheerleader, and of course, great resource for reference stuff and for keeping me on track theologically.
I love that. I've been lucky enough. He's been a client of mine through another business that I own, and I have worked with some of his book trailers. He's amazing. He's truly, truly amazing.
Yeah, he'll be 86 next month, and still active.
86.
Yeah, can you believe it?
Wow! And he's still very active, right?
He really is. Last I heard, he was still jogging and working out and things like that. So,
wow.
He wants to live to be 100. I know that.
Now, tell me, why do you think the Left Behind series was, and it still is, so hugely popular?
I think it was the great writing. No, I'm kidding. I think it was an idea whose time had come. You know, we live in very scary times, and I think people are looking for something beyond themselves. And you know, even people that have no interest in the church or God, they are looking for something. They're afraid, and you see that books by the Pope and the Dalai Lama and the Eastern healing gurus, those books just fly off the shelf. And I think when people like that heard about fiction based on Bible prophecy, it met that same hunger and thirst. think, you know, something in the fiction worked for them. They loved the characters. They kept turning the pages. They wanted to know what was coming next. And so it just, you know, and then for some reason, we didn't even think about this when we started. The first one came out in 1995. But when we got near the end of the millennium, all of a sudden everybody started thinking about the end of the world. Nobody knows why. I don't know why they think the end of the millennium would have anything to do with the end of the world, because for one thing, our calendar's off by several years already anyway, and I don't think God uses our calendar. So, but still, it caused people to think and talk about that kind of thing, and so it just generated more and more interest in that subject. So that's I think, what came together to make that such a phenomenon.
Well, and then they made a movie, which is actually how I first heard about the series. Now, my husband, he and I have been married about 7 years. He had read the whole series. I had seen the movie, so it became something for us to talk about. How did you feel about seeing the movie?
Hey, how about those Chicago Cubs?
All right. just, the book's always better. You can't beat what you can imagine in your head. You never can.
Yeah, I try not to, you know, to badmouth the movie, because there are people that have been ministered to by it. My feeling is that, you know, I wish it could have been done with the great special effects like some of the big Hollywood movies. And
that would have been great.
And there's some talk that they may still try to take another run at it and do it, you know, big budget style. But you know, there's so much there, and it's such a visual read anyway that I still would love to see it in a big budget Hollywood movie.
Now, are you doing anything with Tim LaHaye now?
No, I keep up with Tim, and we interact a lot. But the last thing we did together, we did. In fact, it was my first foray into biblical fiction. We did a thing called the Jesus Chronicles, based on the lives of the four gospel writers. So we did Matthew's story, Mark's story, Luke's story, and John's story, and you know, all obviously set in the first century. And again, fleshing out those stories. When you hear the story about the little boy who brought his lunch to Jesus, I give him a name, I give him a conversation with the disciples, I give him a response to when he sees what happens. So just, you know, kind of fleshing out those stories. And people are very familiar with what went on, but they might just want that to play out a little more. So that was sort of my introduction to biblical fiction, and I think helped prepare me for what I'm doing now.
Fantastic. Now, I know, Anita, you have some questions, and I've been kind of eating up the time, so I'm going to go ahead and turn the mic over to you and let you ask some of the questions that you have prepared.
Thank you, Sheila. I am anxious to do that very thing. Jerry, you and Tim LaHaye did a lot to help readers become aware of Christian fiction. It's so impressive what you did. And so you have seen it evolve over these many years. And I was just wondering about the future. There's a lot of talk about that. But where do you see the future in Christian publishing, Jerry?
Well, it's going the same way as secular publishing as far as the technology. I mean, the e-books, this is a tidal wave. And there are a lot of people who say, well, I like the old style, I like the smell and feel of a book and certain advantages of that. The fact is, you need to either get out of the way or get run over, because my wife and I vacationed in Hawaii this January, and I just was looking around the pool. At one point there were 16 people reading, and 14 of them were reading on some sort of electronic device.
Oh, my, yeah.
And I have 125 books on my phone. I keep getting smaller. I had books on my computer, then I had them on a Kindle, then I had them on my iPad, and then I realized you can put them on your phone and you can read anywhere. I mean, if you're sitting in traffic, you can read.
Yeah.
And so it just gets handier and handier. And I, you know, being an author, I love books, but the idea, I wouldn't want to have to lug 125 books around wherever I go, and I can read more than one book at once. There's such advantages to that. Right now I'm reading Bonhoeffer's biography. At the same time, when I need a break, I read a few chapters out of Anne Lamott's writing book, Bird by Bird. So that's where it's going. As far as the Christian content, I think we really have grown up a lot. You know, years ago, the Christian novels were all pretty much fairy tales, where everything worked out well in the end, and all the strings were tied up in a bow. And now they're getting more real and more gritty. But the difference is that we write with a worldview of hope, and so even if we're telling hard, you know, true, difficult, you know, stories that are they're fiction, but they're truth with a capital T, just like the parables that Jesus told. In the end, there has to be hope, even if it isn't all that they all lived happily ever after.
Well said. I totally agree. And going back to what you were saying about the e-book thing, my husband and I were in Maui in February, and I did just the opposite. I was taking a book with me, and I ran out. And then, so I thought, what am I going to do now? I don't have an e-book reader. And so I ended up having to go to the bookstore to Barnes & Noble in Maui and actually buying another book just to get me by. And then when we got home, I thought, that's it. It's over. I'm definitely going to buy an e-book reader because it's so much easier on trips. So even I, who love the smell of new books, is definitely going to have to succumb to the e-book reader also. So
yeah,
anyway.
And it's so handy. You know, you can sit by the pool and, you know, you're reading the paper and see an ad for a book. You can download a sample, and if you like it, you just order it, and within 45 seconds, you got the whole book on your machine. It's just amazing.
It is amazing. It is. Well, and now we're switching gears a little bit, and I just would love to know how it is that you got into writing. How did all of this start?
Well, when I was in high school, I wanted to be a big league baseball player, as lots of kids do, and I got hurt playing sports when I was my first year of high school. And so to stay close to that scene, I started sports writing. And I realized almost immediately that I found my niche. I wasn't good at it yet, but I had a knack for it because I'd been reading sports pages, and somehow writing was a thing that was sort of a gift of mine. As I say, I had an awful lot to learn, but I actually talked my way into a job with a local newspaper as a sports stringer. I would cover high school sports, and they paid me $1 per inch that turned up, that wound up in the paper. So I say I was I've been a professional writer since I was 14, but I was too young to even drive, so my parents had to drive me to the ball games and drive me to the newspaper office. But what an advantage to know what you want to do with your life. I didn't know I'd be an author and write books, but I knew I wanted to be a writer for all that time. So it really helped focus me and put me on track.
That is a blessing to be able to get started so early like that. Well, now, with every different writer, I'm sure they think that there's a particularly, you know, a hard spot when they're writing a novel. What is the hardest place for you in putting together a novel?
Usually it's about three-quarters of the way through. I consider writing a novel like running a marathon. People often say to me, you know, when did you know you loved writing? And I think, wow, I love having written, and I love being able to write, and I love being known as a writer and doing something that's relatively unique. Not a lot of people can do it. But, boy, you hit that wall, and you realize you got to finish, and no matter how many times you've done it before, it's still grueling. And I you know, compare it to somebody saying to a marathoner at about the 24-mile mark, when did you know you loved running? You know, you might get an obscene gesture from them as they go by. Because the work itself is grueling. It's just hard work. But it's so rewarding that it's worth it, or I wouldn't keep doing it. You know?
Yeah. Oh, well said. I like that. Well, you do a lot to help writers. You advise and support them. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I always loved teaching writing and benefited so much from people who taught me and were mentors. And one time I was on a board with Norman Rohr, the guy who founded the Christian Writers Guild back in the 60s, and we got snowed in at my house after a meeting, and I saw him over a few days doing his work where he was mentoring writers and judging their work and critiquing them and that type of thing. He did it by mail and with a typewriter, and he had 300 or 400 students. And I told him how impressed I was with that and how I'd love to do that someday or help with that. And when he got up to an age where he didn't bother with all the business part of that, he suggested that he might want to get out from under that. So I actually bought the guild from him, kept him on as the dean of instruction, but then reproduced him probably 40 or 50 times. We've got mentors all over the country. We changed from typewriter to computer, and we changed from the mail to email. And we probably have 1,000 students and members now, and we have several courses and contests and conferences. And my whole goal there is to try to give back and to restock the pool of Christian writers. We're non-profit, but not by design. I'd like it to make money or break even. I've owned it about 10 years, and believe me, I've given back. It's not a money-making proposition, but it really is rewarding to see people learn and grow and become published themselves.
No, that's an excellent goal. I'm very impressed. Well, switching gears again, I'd love to know, and I'm sure the listeners would love to know, of all time, of all the books that you've read, I mean, what's an absolute favorite?
Of ones I've read?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that you've read.
Yeah, my favorite book, and it's probably a little obscure, people would expect a classic, but there's a book called All Over But the Shoutin', and it's by Rick Bragg, B-R-A-G-G. He was a columnist for the New York Times, but it was a memoir of his growing up in the Deep South, raised by a single mother, had two brothers, I think it was. But the writing is just so poetic that, you know, I don't like to read a book where you have to read a paragraph over to figure out what it means. With his, I love to just stop and read it again because it's so beautiful. And some writers, you read them and you strive to emulate them. With him, I just surrender and say, I'll never reach that level, but it sure is great stuff. So I always encourage new writers, old writers, anybody that's interested in really good writing, just download or find a copy of All Over But the Shoutin' by Rick Bragg. Great stuff.
All right. I have written it down, and I will read it. Thank you for that tip. Well, what is the favorite book of yours that you've written?
My favorite of everything I've written is a novel called Riven, R-I-V-E-N.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, I realize we're close to time out here, but it's the longest book I've ever read, so I tell people, you know, buy it for the story and keep it for the doorstop, you know. But it's a story of a guy who is on death row and chooses crucifixion as his method of execution, not because he wants to atone for his sin. I mean, he wants to be forgiven, but he wants to, because he comes to faith, he wants to show people what the real horror of the crucifixion was to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the idea for more than 20 years before I finally got to it, and I was really thrilled with how it came out and the package that Tyndale put together. So that's my personal favorite.
Oh, amazing. That sounds amazing to me. Well, we don't have a lot of time left. Do you want me to ask some more questions, Sheila, or are you desperate to ask yours now?
Well, I'm always desperate to ask mine. But why don't you pick one more out of your list, and then I'll pick one, and we should be good.
Oh, dear. Well, because I love movies so much, I'm going to skip right over and talk about movies. You have a film company, Jerry Jenkins Entertainment, and I'd love to know what kind of movie project you're working on.
Well, actually, my son, who ran the film company for us a couple of years ago, joined the staff. In fact, it's the same pastor that's helping me with the Paul book. Dallas is director of visual media at Harvest Bible Chapel for him in Chicago now, and they hired him to make movies. So we're cooperating with that church, and we're in the embryonic stages, just right around the script writing. We don't even have a title yet, but it's going to be a film a lot like the ones that the Sherwood Baptist made from those guys in the South. But Dallas, having worked in Hollywood for 10 years, will cast it there and use a crew there and really try to compete in the secular market with it. So we'll be announcing the title and the synopsis of that in a few months.
Oh, that sounds exciting. Truly, we'll be watching for that, Jerry. Well, Sheila, I'll hand the mic back over to you because I know you had some more questions.
Well, I I'm choosing from my list too. I would love to know, Jerry, how has your fame affected your life as a Christian?
You know, I really have tried to stick around, but I think it was an advantage that the phenomenon of Left Behind happened pretty much in my 40s and early 50s rather than, say, 10 years before that. I got to the point where I've worked with lots of famous people. I've done a lot of biographies of Hall of Fame athletes. I worked with Billy Graham and people like that. And I've seen how people respond to fame and to means. And I really felt a grave feeling about the responsibility and the accountability. And my goal has always been that people who knew me then still know me now, that they don't see a difference. It's great to have means, it's great to have freedom, it's great to be able to see your kids when you want to and that type of thing, but it should not change who you are. And my late father always said, you know, if you ever come into means, it won't make you a different person, it'll show you who you are. And so
I love that.
Yeah, I do too. Beautiful.
Well, we're out of time, and like I said, I think we could have done an hour show easily. Jerry, thank you so much for finding the time to come and talk to us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Great to be with you. Thanks.
Thank you. And Anita, of course, thank you. You're always so great to find us amazing guests, and I appreciate you as well.
You're very welcome, Sheila. It really was a great show.
And I want to thank our listeners for joining us here in Faith Network. You can download the podcast in about an hour. And don't forget, come over to InFaithNetwork.com. Tomorrow we'll have a blog. We'll make sure you have all the links that you need. And we will see you again next month. Thanks a lot.
In Faith Network Radio. Blessings through entertainment. www.infaithnetwork.com. Come join our ever-growing Christian community.